You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yes, so the Helen Clark Foundation and the New Zealand Institute of Economic Research have released a report that states raising the minimum wage will boost productivity and create a more inclusive economy and help with our COVID response. So I spoke to Dr. Eric Crampton. He is with the New Zealand Initiatives. He's a New Zealand Initiatives chief economist about the suggestion of raising the minimum wage to help with our COVID recovery.
I tend to be pretty worried about minimum wage increases in recessions. So New Zealand's minimum wage, as the report acknowledges, is fairly high relative to the OECD. So if you look across the OECD statistics, if you compare New Zealand's minimum wage to the median wage, the minimum wage here is much, much higher as a proportion of the minimum wage as compared to other developed countries. That means that as we continue to push that higher, we're really getting into uncharted territory as compared to other countries. So you'll hear a lot of talk about studies done in the United States on that there's been very little effect of minimum wage increases on overall employment. But while the minimum wage in the United States as compared to the median is around 38-39% of the median, it varies state by state, some are higher than that, but the federal minimum wage is only about 38-39% of the median. In New Zealand, it's over 70%. So there will be dramatic differences in the effect of the minimum wage on employment when it's much closer to the median wage. It's more binding. It affects more people. Now, that means on the one side that if you increase it, you are increasing the wages of more people, but you would also risk disemploying a lot of people. Now, that doesn't mean that the underlying concern isn't a good one, that it can be very difficult to live on low wages, and that would especially matter when you're not thinking about people who are just starting out or maybe doing a summer job while they're a student, but people who are trying to raise families on that. Fortunately, New Zealand already has a policy framework that tries to provide extra resources to people in that situation. So there we have working for families that tops up the wages of those who are on lower incomes. Some work that had been done around 2008-2009, and I wish it would be repeated, but it was showing that the minimum wage, at least then, was very poorly targeted if we're thinking about households in desperate need. So a lot of workers who are on the minimum wage are not in really low-wage households. They're in higher-wage households where one earner is on lower wages. So a kid who is just starting out as a student with a bit of part-time work, a second earner who's going back into the labor force after a bit of time outside of the labor force. A lot of minimum wage earners are in those kinds of circumstances, so big increases in the minimum wage will help them, and as long as they're able to keep their jobs, but they risk disemploying people who are more marginally attached to the labor force. And then working for families can't even help them, right, because that's an in-work subsidy. So I would much strongly prefer that any assistance that's needed in that kind of line would be provided through beefing up working for families rather than through increases in the minimum wage. And there's another way of thinking about it. If we think that it's equitable that society as a whole helps support those on lower income, then it's best that the burden of that fall through the tax system disproportionately on higher earners like me, I'm on the higher tax rates, rather than on the people who employ lower wage workers and the customers of the firms that provide the goods and services that are provided by lower wage workers. It's much better targeted. It has less risk of disemploying the people that you're trying to help. So for all of those reasons, it seems to make a lot more sense to run it through wage subsidies, like working for families, rather than minimum wage increases. And especially in a recession, if firms are sort of teetering on the borderline of whether or not to lay off workers and make them redundant because revenues have gone down, we don't have tourists going around filling up the bars and restaurants like we used to, there are parts of the country that had been fairly reliant on tourists that now don't have those, it's going to be a tough ask for those firms to keep workers on at all, never mind with a substantial minimum wage hike.
Is it sustainable as a nation to move forward into the future and rely on benefits to be lifting up those that are earning minimum wages instead of trying to get pay equity across the board?
Well, I think that we should be looking instead at productivity overall. So ultimately, wage growth only happens when we have productivity growth. Productivity growth has been weak. We need to be looking more comprehensively at what would improve productivity growth and what is holding it back. I think one of the big areas there is around land use planning, actually, that the system that we've set up around housing means that people cannot move to the places where they would be most productive. So it's harder to move closer to work, for example, if you're already in Auckland, if you're outside of Auckland, and you would be able to earn an awful lot more in Auckland, it's just going to be sucked up in housing costs anyway. We set a system now where any productivity gains we get turned into land price appreciation because rents wind up going up and house prices wind up going up, so you don't really help people. Focusing on unleashing productivity and making sure that it doesn't just turn into land price appreciation would do an awful lot more for families than minimum wage hikes that risk causing people to become disemployed, to knock them out of work.
So in the COVID recovery, what are, in your opinion, the two most important steps that we can take right now to increase that productivity to benefit us all round?
Right now, we need to have a massive push on housing to break the back of this thing. We need to have such a flow of new housing into the market that we don't get capital gains in housing anymore. The problem isn't the lack of a capital gains tax, it's that we're getting capital gains in housing of this order in the first place. So if the government needs to make a credible commitment that so much housing can come onto the market that house prices stop going up like this. How could they do that? Change the incentives for local councils so that councils welcome growth rather than trying to block it. The simplest way to start doing that, look at the amount of taxes collected by central government on new residential construction or new construction overall within an urban boundary, and give councils back the DST component. So figure out the amount of construction activity, times it by 15%, give that as a grant from central government to local government so that every new build gives direct money to local council and a whole pile of reasons to say yes to more housing rather than no to it. Once that signal is sent, then if investors are reasonably expecting that a lot more housing will come on stream, it will take a long time. We still need to gear up a whole lot more construction workers. The sector is not prepared for the amount of building that needs to happen because we've never allowed the amount of building that needs to happen. Sending a signal that it will be allowed to happen over an extended period would let the construction sector gear up, train up more trading, get a lot more people working in that area, and start building the houses that we need.
And just back to the minimum wage, we have seen increases in the minimum wage under this government. The latest was in January. Is it too soon to see the impact that that increase in minimum wage has had? Has it had the negative impact that may have been predicted?
During normal times, the effects of minimum wage increases, we're not really expecting it to turn up in firing. We're expecting it to turn up in jobs that aren't created that otherwise might have been. So with the gradual ramp-up that we have had, it has coincided with a very strong labor market overall. That's meant that it's been far less likely to result in disemployment. This time around, with COVID having come in and then the wage subsidy scheme on top of that, it would be very difficult to disentangle it. In fact, somebody would have to go into the data lab at Stats New Zealand and do an awful lot of work to sort of piece out any causal effects, because at the same time, the government made it a lot more expensive to hire people who are on the way they are, or to keep them employed. During a crazy pandemic recession, they were also paying firms to keep those workers employed. Disentangling those effects will not be simple. I worry that further increases, though, while firms are already considering disemploying workers, with the wage subsidy now having correctly ended, it's incredibly risky. There are other good aspects to the NZIER Helen Clark Foundation report. They're right to point to the importance of education and strengthening that, strengthening vocational training. There's a lot of things that can be done in those areas. We worry that some kids who might be very well suited for university aren't being prepared for it very well at secondary school. And at the same time, some other kids might be being pushed into university who would be far better suited for trades and not racking up piles of student debt in university when they could instead be going into trades and earning a wage far more quickly. So there is work to be done in that area, and it's great that they've been talking about that as well.
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say.
The Wire.
That was Dr. Eric Crampton, Chief Economist at the New Zealand Initiative. Now, Workplace Relations Minister Michael Woods has not ruled out raising the minimum wage to the living wage, and the minimum wage is set to increase to $20 next year. I talked with the opposition, Honourable Todd McClay, National Spokesperson for Economic Development, about National's position on raising minimum wage.
Under the National Government, we did increase the minimum wage every year. The point that I'm making is that they're not asking for the minimum wage to be increased. They're asking for it to be pushed up very, very quickly to the equivalent of the living wage. And the point that I'm making here is that at a time when we know there are, you know, a couple of hundred thousand New Zealanders looking for work, what we actually need is policies that will create jobs. The challenge you have with the fast increases to the minimum wage is it does just pile cost upon business. And if you think about small businesses, particularly in New Zealand at the moment, who have come through the lockdown with some of them very large levels of debt, extra costs means two things. They either have to pass that on to consumers, which is not always possible, or secondly, they need to, you know, reduce costs. And inevitably, the way that they do that is when somebody leaves their business, they stop working there, they don't replace them. And so what we've seen over the last 3 years before COVID as a result of, you know, sharp minimum wage increases and many other costs that have been put upon businesses in New Zealand is that job growth slowed, and in some months it was negative. And that's a leading indicator, an early indicator of what happens around unemployment. And the very best way that we can ensure that people are paid more is around productivity gains, so that then, you know, as businesses you know, become more productive, those gets passed on. But I'm not saying the minimum wage shouldn't increase on a case-by-case basis. Each year a consideration is made. It's those big jumps ahead that the Helen Clark Foundation are asking for that I think would be quite harmful for job creation. And it's really hard for people to earn more and provide for their families if they haven't got jobs.
So the Helen Clark Foundation believes that a minimum wage increase and maybe a big jump to living wage would increase productivity. But what are two steps that you would take right now to boost productivity?
Yeah, well, before I come to that, I don't agree with them that it would boost productivity. You see, the thing is that if a sharp increase in the minimum wage doesn't have a consequence, then the government could just pay $50 an hour, because the case that the Helen Clark Foundation is trying to make is that if you pay people more through an increase to the minimum wage, they'll spend that, and then ultimately that flows to the economy and they become more productive and the economy grows. But we know that's not the case. When the minimum wage was last put up, Treasury forecast about 6,500 people would lose their jobs. By that, what they mean is those jobs are not created. And the people that miss out are the ones that often have the least in society, or they have the fewer options, or the least lower skill levels, and those jobs that they depend on become harder to get. So two things I would do. The first is find ways to reduce burden upon businesses. That's not saying give businesses a free run at everything. You need good rules and you need regulations, but actually what we need in New Zealand is regulations upon businesses that make sense and work, don't just take up time or form filling and become a cost. The second thing is the government should look at everything that they do, and if it imposes a cost upon business, decide whether or not that's reasonable and that's fair, because every time the government costs the business money, actually, that's less that they get to pay an employee, or that's one less job that they get to create. If you take one of the proposals the government has at the moment of doubling sick leave, look, when people are ill, of course they should be looked after. You know, you don't want people who are ill working and feeling that they have to. But what the government has said is they want to double sick leave, and that means for a small business that, say, employs five people, that's an extra 5 weeks' worth of wages they need to find that they didn't before. And this isn't about what should happen if somebody is ill. It's just that for many small businesses in New Zealand, to find 5 weeks of extra wages on top of all the other costs that have been piled on means that ultimately they're going to say, got to put the costs up, or gee, maybe we can't re-employ one person when they leave. We'll go down to four and work a bit harder.
So let's talk about the redistribution of wealth. How do you propose supporting these people further that are earning the minimum in New Zealand?
But that's not actually what the Clark Foundation proposed. They proposed pre distribution, not redistribution. So they'd need to talk more about what they mean when it comes to pre-distribution. Ultimately, though, the way that we ensure that those who earn the least can be better off and do better is one through giving them skills, through training and other things, so that they are able to get better jobs. That's the first thing. And so it's about investment, about education, not only through the school system, but actually when people leave school. But if somebody is in the workforce and they are on the minimum wage having some period of time, of course they're not going to be doing as well as we need them to. Offering them the opportunity to upskill so that they can get better jobs that pay more is something that is important, and the government needs to focus on much, much more. The second thing is about the type of jobs that are created. There will always be a need for manual labour that is paid less. And in essence, if we think about much of our economy around exports, which is where a very large amount of the income New Zealand generates and needs comes from, we're an export-led economy, we have to be very careful that we don't get out of step with other countries of the world. That doesn't mean we should pay the same as other countries who maybe have lower wage base, but it means that if we end up putting too many costs upon export type businesses, they're not able to compete overseas, and therefore the goods or services that we provide overseas that New Zealand, the economy, needs to be selling overseas may not be doing as well as we need them to. So we need to look at the type of jobs that are being created that in the end will pay more. And if we take tourism before COVID as an example, one of the policies that National had before the last election was finding ways to better recognise that tourism can be a career rather than, as some would see it, a low-paid job that often students would do in the holidays, and for the industry itself to continue to invest in training for people younger and older so that the type of jobs that they do in tourism end up paying more. Tourism was our number one export, more than $17 billion from overseas visitors. Over time, as the border opens to visitors again, that will come back, and I suspect international tourists, when they feel safe or able to, will want to come to New Zealand in significant numbers, given how attractive our country is for holidaying and visiting. How can we have people train and be ready to make sure that they're doing, they're filling the type of job that will pay them more than they get on the minimum wage at the moment. Just merely putting the minimum wage up to the living wage actually will never help people get ahead, and the reason for that is it will forever have to be put up because the living wage is an average of other wages as opposed to what people actually may need to get by on.
Going down this path that you are suggesting, we have seen the inequality gap get bigger and bigger over the past decade. How do you suggest reducing the gap between the rich and the poor?
Well, ultimately, by making people not earn as much and giving to those who are not earning the amount that you might want, in itself doesn't necessarily work. And so it is about the type of economy that you have and the type of jobs that are created. Take, for instance, the increase of the minimum wage over the last 3 years, and assume it's going to be $20 an hour. Arguably, the families who are on the minimum wage and still on the minimum wage are not better off because their rents have gone up significantly and food prices have gone up and many other things in society have gone up as a result of costs the government has imposed upon businesses, or that businesses have to pass on some of these extra costs to the consumer. And so actually I'm not sure that they are better off even though the minimum wage has increased.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. But what will work for a more inclusive economy and to reduce that inequality gap?
Well, that will exactly. So if a business needs to employ somebody at $22 an hour, for instance, and somebody has been sitting for a long time on the minimum wage, why are they not able to get that job where they might earn $4 more an hour, which will make a material difference to them? It's because they haven't got those skills there. So we need to make sure they have the skills and they're able to get to that workforce. But at the same time, I think that those that earn the most actually are able to weather the storm of increased cost of living as a result of government decisions. Those that earn the least are the ones that it's hardest hit by.
That was National Spokesperson for Economic Development, Todd McClay.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.